Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 317 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Jonathan Merrill. Jonathan owns a family law practice in the Chicago area, I think actually downtown Chicago, that has experienced some pretty phenomenal growth as of late. Now reaching 17 attorneys and support staff that associated with those attorneys, started as a solo practitioner, and really grew his law firm pretty quickly. One of the things we're going to spend a fair amount of time talking about is how to attract talent to your law firm, because one of the things that most people are complaining about these days is their inability to find qualified candidates for the jobs that they do have open. And Jonathan seems to have crack that code a little bit. So I think there's something to be learned from this interview, and I hope you get something out of it. So without any further delay, here's Jonathan Merrill. Jonathan Merrill, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us here today, Jonathan. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, well, I have a family law practice based out of Chicago. Started my firm about 13 years ago, just a little over that. And it was just me. And last I checked, we're up to 17 attorneys. So it's been a journey. It's been great ups and downs, but overall, more ups and downs. And, it's great to talk with you and talk shop about our careers and, spread the knowledge to the podcast universe.
Awesome. So when you first started out, you started out as a solo. Did you know that's what you're going to do? Did you know you're going to do family law? How did you fall into that, some would say, pit?
Yeah, exactly. Depends what day you ask. Well, I never really knew what I wanted to do when I went to law school.
None of us did.
Yeah, exactly.
And it always annoyed me that they asked on the very first day, what kind of law do you want to practice? Well, I don't know. Well, you got to figure it out by the end of the semester.
Yeah, exactly. So I really had no idea. I knew I didn't want to do anything like transactional. That just kind of not my style. And then I started with a job as a law clerk at a family law firm in Chicago. And I'm like, I kind of like this. This I can see myself doing it. And that was over 20 years ago. Huh? But the rest is history, as they say. But it resonated with me. I liked the idea of, dealing with like people in real life situations and, helping people navigate through tough times. It just kind of clicked with me. And after I passed the bar exam, I started as an associate at another family law firm in Chicago. I was there for about 7 years, started building up my own book of business. I kind of always envisioned myself eventually going on my own. And I made the leap in 2009. So.
And, to all my family law attorneys out there, I meant nothing disparaging by calling it the pit. I too was a family law attorney for many years, so I get it. And then one of the things that attracted me to the family law was that there's always a story behind every case. There's always a family behind every case. And while there are similarities, they're all unique.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a unique field of law. And I mean, it definitely takes a certain type of person to deal with it. Not that, that applies to any area of the law, of course, but you're part lawyer, you're part therapist. you're part, 911 operator when you're getting calls at all hours of the day.
And a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
So tell me, so you said you always kind of envisioned yourself, you know, going out on your own. What did you do to prepare for that, if anything?
Well, I obviously I got the knowledge base and kind of like the ins and outs of how a law firm operates, good and bad, as an associate. And, you know, as I was, you know, a young lawyer and, you know, being a sponge for information as it pertained to the law and how to practice, I was also kind of, you know, taking in like what I liked and didn't like about the firm that I worked at. So while I was learning as a young lawyer about how to be a lawyer, I was also kind of learning like what I envisioned my own practice being and like the culture I would want to create if I had my own firm. So by the time I left, I kind of had a vision in my head as to, you know, what I wanted my practice to grow into.
So you make the leap. And did you go right to a physical space in those days, which is mostly what people did, or was it a shared space? You get an office in a buddy's firm. How did it physically manifest itself after you opened the doors?
Sure. Well, first of all, it was like a nerve-wracking experience. Anytime you take the leap, and you know, I know people throughout the years who have the same feeling. Obviously, you're going from getting a paycheck to, you know, you are the paycheck. So yeah. It's a big change. And my second daughter was being born and there was the recession. And everyone was like, wow, this is interesting timing that you're doing this. But I'm like, I need to do this. So I did it. Thankfully, my uncle who practices real estate law had an extra office for me available in the Loop in Chicago. So that worked out well.
Okay.
Popped in there, shared space with them. We ultimately moved to a different office about a year later. And you know, we've grown our office a ton. Eventually, they actually still, while I was like the small person in their space, the kind of roles have switched. You know, we keep expanding our office and they have a few offices in our office now. So I was like the subtenant and now they're kind of like the subtenant.
Turnabout is fair play, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think I'm always grateful to them for giving me the opportunity to move in and, you know, giving me a place to, you know, to work where I probably would have had to find, I didn't really have to think about it, thankfully, because I knew that was an option for me.
So what were some of the things that you wanted to do differently and how did you do them differently?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's taken time, but I didn't like the culture at my old firm and, you know, their firm's not in existence anymore, but, you know, there were good people that worked there, but it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel right. And I wanted to create like a culture where people wanted to come to work every day and like-minded people. And I guess you could say my firm is on the younger side. Okay. You know, I think I'm 44 years old and I'm one of the oldest people there. There's, you know, one of our attorneys is older than me, but other than that, everyone's younger. So, you know, the age obviously helps create the culture because, you know, you're not dealing with older people. It's mostly kind of all people in their 30s and 40s. So that obviously helps with the culture. And then, you know, I wanted obviously everyone to come in and know that they have to work their ass off, but also, you know, be able to take a step back and enjoy where they're at. So it's finding that mix. And again, you have to find the right people to buy into the culture and create the culture. But that was always a huge thing for me, is to just to create an environment where people enjoyed coming to the office. They knew they were going to work their butts off, but, you know, could always take a step back and, you know, go into the kitchen or somewhere in the office and, you know, shoot the shit with their colleagues, whether it be about their personal life or work. So it's that culture where I wanted it to be, you know, loose, but obviously serious as well, because we deal with serious issues.
Well, it's a fine balance, isn't it? I mean, you want to present that professional demeanor, you know, to clients and to other attorneys, but you do want that, you know, spirit and that joy that people would like to have in the workplace and outside of it as well. So is there anything you did specifically beyond you know, kind of skewing a little younger to help promote that type of environment?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's funny because I'm obviously heavily into marketing, as are you. And, you know, I'm learning more and more that marketing is not just about targeting clients. It's about targeting talent as well that makes your firm look like a great place to work, which I feel it is. But, you know, you're marketing to not just potential clients, but potential employees. So, you know, I've tried to focus in on that. And I believe by creating a good brand and a culture and an image that will ultimately attract good talent. And even though talent's very hard to find right now.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into that a little bit, because, you know, this is an area where right now, this is the number one complaint I hear over and over again from attorneys and small firm practitioners who are saying, I just can't find the talent. I put an ad out there for an associate and I'm crickets. I'm getting nothing, not just a few. I'm just getting nothing. And it seems to be a crisis.
I couldn't agree more.
And there's all kinds of speculation as to why that is. Oh, well, people don't want to work, or, you know, people don't want to work in law firms anymore. They want to, be piecemeal attorneys and have complete 100% flexibility, or whatever the excuse is. You've grown during this period of time when it's hard to find people, it's hard to find talent. You've grown now to 17 attorneys, which is a pretty significant step. So tell us about marketing for talent.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just part of it. You know, you definitely got to put in the work too. I mean, the best places over the years, looking back in getting talent, is one, like cultivating the talent yourself, where you've got law clerks working for us and they, you know, grow into associates and, you know, have a long career, hopefully at the firm. But otherwise, you got to go out and find people. So I just want the firm to have an image and a brand that looks attractive to people. Obviously, you know, our reputation in Chicago is one that we have integrity and we're, you know, good people and good attorneys, which, you know, is first and foremost going to attract the best people, is if you're, you know, a top tier law firm to begin with. But otherwise, you know, in marketing, you want to kind of show yourself, like, and brand, you know, not just me, but the lawyers in my office, but just to show that it's a good place to work, to kind of express myself through social media and podcasts like this, where, you know, people get to kind of know me if they don't know me otherwise, and can say, look, that might be a good place for me. So I think it's branding the firm, but also getting the word out there that, you know, Jonathan Merrill is a good guy to work for. So it's a combination of that. But another place to look for people is on the cases we have. I mean, I'm always talking to my attorneys and saying, look, if you're on, there's someone on the other side of a case that you're working on and you think they're great, let's perhaps reach out to them. I mean, I don't want to burn any bridges in my business and, you know, steal lawyers from people that I'm friendly with, but I mean, that's business. I mean, you know, if you're not making your place a top place to work and you're not making your employees happy to work there, then they're going to work elsewhere. So,
And there's an awful lot of solo practitioners who would welcome somebody reaching out to them.
Exactly. Exactly. We've done that too. One of my partners, he was a solo for 7-8 years. And I mean, I knew how great of an attorney what he was when he worked for another firm before he went solo. And I reached out to him on LinkedIn and, you know, we didn't have like a long relationship. I think we had a few cases together back in the day, but I reached out to him. He just kind of fit the mold. I knew he was an excellent attorney and a smart guy. And we just started talking. And I said, look, if you'd ever consider, you know, joining a firm, you know, we do whatever it takes to kind of make the transition work for you. And I think you'd like working here. And he made the leap. And I mean, he's one of my best people I've ever brought in. I couldn't be happier. And he likes the change himself.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by the net profit CFO, Ryan Kimmler. If that name sounds familiar, you might remember him as being a guest on episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, where we talked about his new company and how they can help you drive profit to your bottom line. I was so enamored by what Ryan had to say that I actually became a client. I called him up and said, I'm ready to take advantage of your expertise. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm now a very happy customer or client of the Net Profit CFO. But I'm also very pleased to welcome them as a sponsor to the show. So do you want to enjoy higher net profits without working longer or harder? As you learned on that previous episode, with just 9 simple numbers, Ryan will help you drive more profit to your bottom line, and he won't confuse you with all the details. If you want to increase your net profit, but don't like getting deep into the numbers, I highly recommend that you connect with Ryan. You can do that by going to netprofitcfo.com and download the Financial Clarity Dashboard. It's a great tool for getting the big picture of your financials. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. Do you use any of the profiling tools or personality evaluation modeling programs to help you make hiring decisions?
You know what? I haven't. It's always just kind of been a feel. Like I've just kind of, if the person feels right in an interview and talking to them, and I hate formal interviews, especially with people like we bring in who have more experience. And, you know, I kind of know going in that they have obviously the experience level. I want to just get to kind of know them as a person, as opposed to like what they've accomplished in the law field, because I probably know that already based on, you know, their track record and where they've worked before. But I just, by getting to just talk with someone and kind of hear about what they are, you know, outside of the office, that kind of gives me more of a feel than, you know, asking them what their best set case was. So that, yeah, that personal one-on-one is crucial to me in hiring.
I spoke to somebody the other day who said something very similar and said, listen, you know, I'm not going to invite you to interview with my firm if I didn't think you were a good attorney.
Right.
You know, I've done my due diligence. I've, you know, done my research. I know you know how to handle legal cases. I want to know how you'd work in our office and how you'd relate to me or how I would relate to you. So their interviews are never done in their office. They're always done in a restaurant, a coffee shop, or a bar.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I can have a much better insight into who someone is over, you know, having a tequila at a bar versus them showing up in a suit across a desk where I'm, you know, in some uncomfortable, tight environment. That's me.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So you, like I said, you're not the first person that's shared that with me. So once they come into the firm, again, you've added a number of attorneys in a fairly short period of time. One of the not complaints, but one of the challenges that we hear from attorneys is, I got to pace out my hiring practice because it takes so much effort to onboard a new attorney. Yeah. What are your thoughts in that area? Do you do anything specifically to help bring them into the fold?
Like once they've been hired, you're saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we obviously, you know, there's usually some lag time before in between, like when they accept an offer and actually start. So we try to get them in for a visit before they actually start on their first day and kind of get the lay of the land for the office. And I mean, that's always something I like discussing with people too, is telling them how things work at the office. And I think any good candidate seeking a job, that should be a question they ask in an interview or a discussion like, how do things work? What's the day-to-day environment like? And what am I going to be doing? So I hope they have some sort of semblance of an idea of how things are going to function before they even start on day one. But once they're in, you know, we kind of have like a checklist of sorts as to things we go over with them and get them up to speed on like our client management software and billing software if they've never used it before, and just kind of integrate them. And again, I never would force it. I'm always cognizant of the fact that this is a transition for anyone starting. And, you know, you want to give them time to just kind of take everything in, kind of get the lay of the land, meet people, kind of see the hierarchy of the firm and how we function. And I think it's important to give employees time to, you know, understand how the place runs.
Yeah, time to settle in.
Right.
So you hit on a couple of my favorite buzzwords when you said CRM and billing system, and that shouts technology to me. So what role does technology play in the management of a growing firm like yours?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to be on kind of like the cutting edge of, you know, technology when it comes to, you know, client management software. We use, I don't know if you know, if you've heard of Smokeball, we've Sure. used them. They've been great. And obviously, you know, from a technology standpoint in marketing too. I mean, I try to really push and focus on the marketing of my practice and branding of the firm. So making sure we're getting out there on social media and LinkedIn and obviously like Google Ads. So, you know, it's obviously crucial to be up to speed on the technology as it pertains to the law, both inside the office and obviously getting the word about your office, you know, outside the office through marketing.
And then let's talk about your marketing efforts. You mentioned social media. How do you manage that? What kinds of things are you putting out in social media? And what kind
Yeah,
of
so, I mean, I've actually, obviously, I'm involved in the day-to-day running of the firm, and I'm an attorney first and foremost, so I'm there for all my clients, but I have taken a little bit of a step back in focusing on, you know, growing the practice and actually, I call it working on the business instead of in the business.
Sure.
So, you know, I've actually focused a ton of my time on obviously always looking for good talent. That's kind of in its own space, but, you know, just doing marketing for the firm. And I recently started a podcast. I've got two episodes out, or the second episode's coming out. So I'm learning from everything, you know, I'm learning from you as we do this interview, just a good way to kind of run the podcast, which you obviously have tons of experience with, but that's just one of the things. And I mean, the biggest step I've taken, I recently hired a full-time director of marketing for my office, which has been, it's been great. She's been awesome. She's come in and just kind of done an audit of everything I've done in the past and I'm doing now for marketing, and kind of figuring out ways to cut the fat and be more efficient when it comes to marketing in all aspects, podcasts, social media, everything. So,
and probably more consistent, because if you're like me, you know, it's hard to be consistent when you're actually doing all the other stuff.
100%. She takes so much off my plate, and I know that there's always someone working every day on the branding and marketing of the firm. So, I mean, it just makes me sleep better at night knowing that it's not all falling on me, which it did previously. And like you said, it allows me to direct my attention to other things.
So, you know, you don't go from one attorney to 17 attorneys and, you know, all the support staff that I'm sure you have helping the attorneys without some challenges. What are a couple of your big challenges or things you wish you could have done differently if you had it to do over again?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you live and learn, obviously. And, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, as they say. So, like, there's always going to be hurdles, and, you know, there will continue to be hurdles. But, you know, I've made mistakes when it comes to, like, marketing and, you know, getting into contracts with marketing companies in the past that, you know, kind of had me in the corner and I didn't like how it was working, and I signed the contract. So I think I was kind of too quick to pull the trigger on some things. And again, it happens. Like, I'm not, every decision you make isn't going to be the right one. But I think I kind of overextended myself sometimes with marketing at the beginning, where I didn't have great decision making when it came to, you know, if I'm paying for leads or using a different service. It was a lot of just kind of taking a risk, and I should have been more calculated in the risks I took. Again, I went into these ideas thinking that this was going to be great. And then when it wasn't, I was kind of stuck in it for another year or two. And so those were mistakes. And then, you know, you've got those kind of mistakes. And then we've had a few hires over the years that I certainly regret and had questions about at the beginning and just didn't trust my instincts enough and hired the person anyways, and it didn't work out. So I think I've learned to trust my instincts. And like we talked about, instead of being more so formal in an interview, just getting to know the person. And yeah. I think had I done that more back then, it would have probably led me to a different decision. But like I said, there's ups and downs. And I mean, the only way to fine tune your business is to, you know, learn from your mistakes, because they're inevitable and they're going to happen no matter what.
For certain. Absolutely. I know in my own case, you know, it wasn't exactly a shotgun approach, but I did, just like you said, I jumped too quick at a couple of opportunities and then was disappointed when they didn't work out. And I just let it sit there and cost me money for a while until I got the backbone to, you know, to stop it. But you make those mistakes once, you know, hopefully not twice. And you, as you said, you learn from them.
Right.
So
exactly. It's how you learn from the mistakes that, you know, make the mistakes. Okay. As long as you learn from them and, you know, don't make them twice,
right.
You're going to be better for it.
Well, tell us a little bit about your podcast. What are you trying to do with your podcast? Raise awareness about your firm? Are you discussing issues with respect to family law, or are you talking about fishing? I don't know.
No, yeah, it's called the Chicago Divorce Podcast with Jonathan Merrill. Okay. And, you know, I don't want to, I like to see, just like we're having a conversation, like I'm trying to make it appealing, not to just people in divorce, but I'm trying to make it appealing to more of like the masses. That's something I'm struggling and figuring out as I go, but I want it to be appealing not just to those who want information about divorce or are going through divorce, but really anyone. So, I mean, you know, that comes with having colorful guests on. And again, I've only had two episodes, but I'm trying to make sure it kind of appeals to more than just, you know, those related to divorce. That's something I'm trying to figure out.
All right, Jonathan, well, tell our audience, what's the best way for them to reach out to you if they want to follow up with anything you had to offer today?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can find information at our website, which is chicagodivorce.com. Anyone can email me anytime at jmerrill, that's J-M-E-R-E-L, at merrillfamilylaw.com. And yeah, I'm happy to chat with anyone about anything, really. So, you know, feel free to reach out.
Wonderful. Well, next time I'm out in Chicago, let's hope that the weather holds and we get on the golf course.
That would be great. I would love to have you.
All right, Jonathan. Thanks ever so much for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them, and I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.